Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're on the Harmony Street Show. My guest tonight is my good friend and lead singer of Randy and the Rainbows, Randy Cefuto.
How you doing, Mike?
How you doing, Randy, man? It's good to talk to you. We haven't spoken in a while.
In a while, yeah, but it's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. So, you know, people want to know all about the Rainbows, but you started a very, very long time ago when you were very, very young.
Yeah, very young. I was actually, 10 years old.
Wow.
I recorded my first song with the Dial Tones. I just turned 11.
Wow. And you know something? I've seen pictures of the Dial Tones. You were pretty cute when you were 11.
Unreal. Oh, you're making me blush.
Yeah.
I was young. I was actually singing at 2 years old with my brothers and my sister, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, we used to do harmonies and everything together, you know, and I'd always be doing backgrounds. And for some reason, you know, as time went on, I mean, I like doing it all, from the bottom to the top.
Right.
Please,
okay.
Whatever it is, you know, I like doing it all.
Right.
That, I guess, was the main thing with singing with me, just, you know, doing it all. And then somebody says, you know, do the leads on this, do the lead with this, do the lead on that. And then the next thing I know, I'm doing leads to everything. So,
wow.
You know, it got to the point, like, even with the Dial Tones, I mean, Rosalie was doing the lead, but I always did one song. At first it was I Wonder Why. She would do it.
Right.
And I started to do the lead to I Wonder Why and all. But we all, you know, through the Dial Tones and everything else, it was always, then I would do a lead here and there, and then with Randy and the Rainbows, that happened, I was lead on everything that we ever did.
Well, you know, it's hard to say, you know, because when you listen to some of the early Dial Tone stuff, you know, and it's a female lead, but, you know, an 11-year-old whose pipes have not changed yet, you know, can sound pretty soprano at that point.
Well, yeah, well, I was, with the Dial Tones, I was, Rosalie was the first tenor lead.
Uh-huh.
I was the first tenor background.
Gotcha.
I mean, I was singing as high as she was on the records.
Well, you know, I like a girl in the group, you know, because I had three girls in my group. But the point is, you know, it takes the pressure off when you have that one girl that can hit all those parts, you know, that's, you know, an A flat and a B above middle C, you know, and it just takes the pressure off, you know?
True, it does. You know, I mean, with Rosalie, she was good with that, you know. I mean, I thought she was a good singer.
Right.
And, you know, personality, she was always beautiful, but
oh, yeah.
Very, very shy. I mean, even till
yeah.
She's a very shy person.
You mean she didn't look the audience right in the eye?
Oh, no.
Hey, listen, Johnny Mathis went on, you know, had a 40 or 45 year career, and he always looked down when he sang. He never looked his audience in the eye. He was very shy, you know, so I guess it works, you know.
Yeah, it does. You know, I mean, Rosalie, I mean, everybody loved her at the time, you know, I mean,
yeah.
With her voice. And, you know, with a record company with Goldner, you
right.
know, George Goldner,
right.
we recorded, well, he had End Records, you know, Gone Records.
Absolutely. I know a lot of people that recorded for them. How did you get hooked up with Goldner?
Well, Goldner, we had a manager that wrote Nicholas DeAngelis.
Uh-huh.
His name was Nick DeAngelis.
Right.
From Brooklyn, and that's where the Downtowns, we originated from, Brooklyn.
Right.
And, you know, Williamsburg section. So he came from that area. And it was funny, Rosalie had an all-girl group.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, she had it. Then they would call the Medallions.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, of course, they used to wear the big medallions.
Oh, no kidding.
And, we heard, you know, we were with, well, my brother, my cousin Eddie, myself, and my brother's friend, Johnny Chico.
Uh-huh.
He was the lead singer of the group. And we were singing, and then, I don't know, came down to where Johnny says he was going into the service.
Right.
So, yeah, he wound up going in, and at that time, you know, we were doing it for more fun than anything else. I mean, we never thought that we would be recording, you know?
Right, that's what we all did.
Yeah, so, it came down to the point where we got this manager, Nick DeAngelis, and he wrote a lot of stuff, too.
Right.
And, I mean, we wrote tunes with him, with the Dial Tones, and, you know, some stuff that we did with him, he put us down as writers because we added stuff to it. So he.
Oh, cool. So he wasn't like Morris Levy who wanted it all.
No. He shared with you, you know. And it got to the point where he turned around, he told us that I'm going to give you to this other guy, Nick Quisato.
Uh-huh.
That he was the, he was one of the singers in the Colts.
Uh-huh.
The Unforgettable they made.
Right, right.
Right. Well, he was one of the singers in there, and he managed us. He's a really smart guy.
Right.
But he screwed a lot of his acts.
I hear you.
He had some of the best acts out at the time, and, I mean, I'm talking groups that were like the Flamingos, Little Anthony and all. You
right.
Know,
great
sounds.
When I spoke to Terry Johnson, who's a very good friend of mine, he actually enlighten me with some of that.
Hi, this is Terry Johnson of the Flamingos, and you're listening to Mike Miller and the Harmony Street Show.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of stuff was going on back then.
Yeah, well, you know, it really did. I mean, I had, you know, just to make it short, because I've said this before in the air, I had Jimmy Key's kids, Jimmy Jr. and Paul, and Jimmy Key's used to come into my office and tell me about the business and everything and what they could and could not do, and pretty much he died penniless, and he wrote Shaboom, which was the biggest crossover R&B tune, and you know, the record companies took it away from him. So, you know, it was a different world then, you know.
Oh yeah, a lot of them. I mean, they did it to Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, you know.
Right. Oh yeah.
The name wrote the tune.
Why Do Fools Fall in Love? It says
Frankie Lyman and
Levy and Lyman. It says.
Yeah, right. And it wasn't that way. You know, Goldner, even on another one, he put his name, George Goldner, as the writer. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, it didn't work that way.
Well,
he just did what they wanted. I mean, we told Goldner with the first record, Till I Heard It From You, and the other side was Johnny.
Right.
We had told him, you know, put out Johnny, it's a smash.
Right.
When he says, well, you know, he goes, it's a good song. He says, I am the record producer, the record owner. I've had a lot of hits, and who's going to argue with the man? You know,
well,
you're right. You got, hit after hit after hit. Forget about it. You can't argue with the guy.
Right. I'm giving you an opportunity, but, you know, it's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules.
Right. So he turned around, and he released Till I Heard It From You.
Yes. I wanted to talk about that song. What year? I think 59, right?
It was 59. And
wow.
It was released in 60. We recorded it in 59. And the record was released in 1960.
Wow.
And it was funny. It came out and was making noise. And it just, for some reason, you know, we were doing shows all over the place.
Right.
Your name in Philadelphia, we were there. And no matter where, we were there, you know.
Right.
And, I mean, with the Willows, we were on.
Listen, I told you that. Here I was at Murray the K's show where you did the movie, the show, and on that show were Randy and the Rainbows, Denise Shubidoo, and you told me a bunch of years ago, you said the one cut that they decided to put on the live album, you guys were all had like double pneumonia that night.
Oh, yeah. My brother had like 104 fever. I mean, he was... I was the only one. I mean, I had like a little laryngitis.
Right.
At least I had some sort of voice, and everybody else in the background was vomiting. And I mean, it was really.
I was there. I saw that show. I think the Chiffons were on that show. I could probably do the whole rundown. The Times were on that show.
Right.
And that was a big selling.
That was one of the
album.
Yeah, well, they said that was one of the best shows that he ever put on.
Oh, absolutely. I'm trying to think of who else was on that show.
Robinson, the Dovells.
I'll tell you. Yeah, they did that their dance routine, and I actually think, oh my goodness, who else was on that show?
Stevie Wonder, Dionne Warwick.
Correct. I remember that she had just come out with "Don't Make Me Over."
That's right.
You know,
a lot of great people on that stage that night. The Cadillacs,
right?
The original Drifters,
right? So from the Dial Tones.
Well, we got a call back from with the Dial Tones that we didn't do anything for about the. 4 months, 5 months, and who was it? 1,000 Stars in the Sky.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Well, she came out with 1,000 Stars.
Right, right.
Kathy Young. Right, and
yep.
She came out with 1,000 Stars. The record went to number one.
Uh huh.
The next thing, we get a call from George Golner. Hi, this is George Golner. Hey, George, what's happening? I'd like for you to come in. Right away, we know. You know, I mean, 1,000 Stars was a ripoff of Johnny.
Right.
I mean, a ripoff.
Right.
So, you know, he turned around and he says, oh, I made a mistake, I'm sorry. We're all entitled to mistakes. I said, yeah, but we could have had a $1 million mistake.
Wow.
You know, so turned around and he says, well, I want you to go looking through these songs, to pick whatever you want.
I never knew that. You know, that's a story that I never knew.
Yeah,
that sounds almost like the Teenager in Love Mystics story where they gave it to the Mystics and Dion said, I don't think so. And
yeah.
He recorded it and they owed him Hushabye.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was like the same thing with the Four Seasons.
Right.
They, you know, when we were on tour with them, we did so much for them that they, you know, they turned around and says, well, we're going to write a song for you guys.
No kidding.
So we said, okay, sounds great, you know. So finally, you know, we see them in the city one day, and we're talking, and I said, hey, you know, Bob, you know, Bob Gordio, I said,
right.
I heard, you know, you were saying you were going to write a song for us. He goes, yeah, it's, I got it, it's done, and we were going to get, you know, we were giving it to you, but Frankie said that he wanted us to do it first. I says, oh, what was that? He goes, Ronnie. I went, oh, my God, I said. figured he wanted us to be the boy group that does all the girls' names.
I hear you.
And that's what we were going to do. We were going to start.
Wow. I never knew that one either. That's it.
Yeah, we were going to start recording all girls' names.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, because they had, what, they had Marcy and all of that stuff.
Yeah, oh, they had every girl's name. But you know what? And we were also, we were getting tired of Gloria.
Yeah, you know, so it was nice. I mean, everything was working out nice. And then they wanted me to sing with them in 64, and I... You know, like a fool, I mean, I turned around, I said, you know, I would love to, but, you know, I had friends, at least you think you got friends in the group there. Mm-hmm. Friends are only there for one thing and one thing only, to use you for what they could get.
I hear you.
But, you know, if
yep.
It's different if they were friends there to be with you, and, you know, 100%, but...
I know.
You know, so with that, it's like I stayed with the group.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Frankie just said, okay, you know, it's all right, you know, do what you're going to do. So we went on, and, of course, we were singing and all. And then we started Randy and the Rainbows.
Okay.
You know, and from the, after doing about four of those songs with the dial tones.
Right. It's a great name.
Yeah. Well, my sister thought that one up.
Wow.
You know, she, we were saying, what's a good name for the group? And, she says, they're the dial tones. You're always hearing it. You know, you pick the phone up and we, whoa, you know. So we told George Gold and he flipped over the name.
Right.
He was a nice, nice hook, you know.
Right.
And we got together. It was funny with Rosalie. We're getting back to her. She said she was breaking up with her group. So, you know, we said, well, we're looking for a singer, you know. Maybe you'd want to see if it works. So she goes, well, we'll get together. If it doesn't work, we'll know the first night, and we'll just say bye-bye. So we went,
right.
No problem. Well, she started singing, and we just started backing her up.
Uh-huh.
And she just, at the end of the night, I mean, no matter what she did, we backed her up.
Uh-huh.
From, you know, When I Fall in Love.
Right.
The Teardrops. I mean, you name it, and we did it. And
well, you know, when you know what you're doing... And you have a grip on it. All you have to do is chime off and hit the tune. A lot of guys spend like 6 weeks in the basement learning one tune because they don't have that sense.
Yeah,
and
doo-wop,
you know, as simplistic as it sounds, is not that easy. But once you have a flavor for it and a feel for it, like not everybody does, all you got to do is if everybody knows the tune, you just chime off and you do it. That separates the men from the boys.
That's it, right? You know, I mean, we did that and. Then Rosalie didn't want to sing anymore, so we, you know.
She must have been in love.
Well, you know, she was going out with one of the lead singers, well, one of the bass singer of a group called the Untouchables at the time.
Uh-huh.
They did a tune called Little Mary.
Right.
They sounded exactly like Little Anthony and the Imperials.
Wow, which is hard to do.
Like, oh, yeah, but if you get the record, Little Mary... now it's the Unforgettables, they had to call themselves, because
right.
The Untouchables were out.
I see.
On TV, and they had to change their name to The Unforgettables.
Oh, all right.
If you could come across that record, Little Mary,
right.
And the other side, oh my God, funny what a little kiss could do,
right.
You would hear two great records that should have been smashes.
Wow.
You'll swear it's Little Anthony and the Imperials, but it's not. It's this group called the Untouchables. And a great group, I mean. And Rosalie was going out with Carlos from the group.
Oh, okay. I'll get a hold of the record, and I'll play it. I'll get it.
From Fort Greene,
uh-huh.
Actually, where, you know, they originated from Fort Greene Projects, where Little Anthony and the Imperials came from. So, you know, with that, I mean... She didn't want to sing anymore, so Golden was looking for somebody else. We tried a couple of girls, and no, nobody really had it. We canned that, and we just wound up, you know, doing our own thing.
Yep.
My cousin Eddie didn't want to sing anymore, so we actually moved to Maspeth, Queens.
Oh, and, I know it well.
Yeah, and that's when I, you know, was hanging around with some guys and all, and... who could sing, who couldn't sing.
Right.
And, we just started fooling around. And
yeah.
It was funny. I said, you know, I need one more guy in here. Actually, I should have gotten rid of Sal in the group because
uh-huh.
he sang.
Uh-huh.
He was the worst singer really in the group.
Well, we're not gonna allow him to listen to this interview.
Right. But I mean, no.
But I'm sure you've said that to him already.
Oh, his own brother said to him he should have never been in the group.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, and it was true. It was like the Beatles did things too.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, they said they kept what's his name, Sutcliffe, in the group, couldn't play a note or whatever, but
right.
He was John Lennon's friend and
right.
Did it like that. Well, I don't know why I even took Sal in a group. My mistake, but he was there. And, you know, I wound up starting the group with that. And
right.
We went to, you know, this friend of mine had a manager. And he was friends with, well, she was friends with Neil Levinson.
Right.
And, of course, Neil Levinson wrote Denise.
Right.
And it's funny, he was friends with Lefrak City. Lefrak City is a man, Sam Lefrak.
Oh, I knew Sam Lefrak, as a matter of fact. My father knew him because my father was a builder for a while. You know, I knew Sam.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
I did.
You know, he was a big builder.
Yep.
And he had a daughter, Jacqueline, and a daughter, Denise. And,
right.
You know, she says, why don't you write a song for me? You know, because she knew that he was in the business.
Right.
And he just started with Oh, Her Knees. He had a song, Her Knees. And he said, Oh, Denise. And,
get out of here.
Yeah, he put it into that.
But yeah, and you know, they produced everything on the planet.
You
know, Jay Siegel was great at producing and putting things together. And still, I mean, you know, you've worked with Jay when he gets in front of the band and Jay Siegel during a sound check makes everybody quivers.
That's beautiful. There's one.
Yeah, he's a perfectionist.
I could say like when we did our sessions, he stayed close to me.
Right.
Because it was like he says, which I never knew what he meant by the time until later on, he goes, your money.
Uh-huh.
And I just said, I wish. He goes, your money. And I went,
cool, man.
Whatever, you know. And he's the one that, you know, I mean, great voice.
Yep.
We did a lot together on the records.
I know. I think I know that, yeah.
How many falsettos with me we were doing.
Right.
You know?
Very cool.
But it's like, they says, well, you do it. I says, why should I have to waste another track? when, you know, I mean, the two of us, you could get a balance on the both of us,
right.
And the two of us could slide right in on the one track, and
right.
You do it, you know.
Right.
Okay, yeah, we could do that, you know, cause, I mean, rather than wasting time, I do one track,
right.
Then I got to go to another track, because,
uh-huh.
I mean, it was bad enough, there were times when, you know, Sal was having a problem with his second tenor,
right.
That I'd be doing second tenor on the record.
Oh, you know, listen, I've done that many times. Gone back into the tracks, and I call it like a little vocal scotch tape.
Yeah.
You know.
Doing a...
like Whiteout. Vocal Whiteout.
They even did bass on some of the tunes.
Yeah, it's cool, you know.
But it was fun, but, you know, then I had the chance to sing with the Four Seasons, and...
Right.
That was I should have went. You know.
You never know. It's like who knew. But you know, as far as Denise is concerned, I mean, and you think about how big that record was, and I think it was probably one of the most, if not the most, popular girls' name tunes ever, because every girl named Denise on the planet knows that it was written for her.
Not only that, but I know a lot of people were saying too that. They were looking for, they knew they were having a daughter.
Right.
You know, the wife was pregnant.
Oh, absolutely.
Daughter, and, like, what are we going to call her? And all of a sudden, like, I could name at least 10 people that when they heard the record, that they said, that's the daughter's name. That's what we're calling our daughter.
What's really funny is, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, we did a show together. I think that one was in Danbury at the Ive Center, and I had Harmony Street. It was a really big, big show. I mean, there were about 10, 12 acts in that show. I mean, everybody was there. The Dimensions were there, and the Toys,
yeah.
and Speedo was there, you know, and here we are in the back. And two things happened that night that I remember, if you're going to recall with me. One of them was you either lost a button on your jacket or you tore your jacket or whatever. And,
yeah.
and Robin had a sewing kit in her, in her bag. And she said, give me that, Randy. And she either sewed the button on. I don't remember exactly what was ripped or torn, but I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, my jacket, the button fell off.
Leave it to the girls to have the, you know, and they had everything, man. They had Imodium, they had Pepto-Bismol, they had headache stuff.
They were beautiful. Hold on, you're still together with them?
No, actually, I left Harmony Street about 10 years ago when I came down to Florida. That's when I joined George Galfo, you know, with the Mystics.
Yeah.
At that time. And to tell you the truth, the reason I moved down, I had lost my brother, my mother, and my father, and was going through a divorce at the same time. And I just moved down to where my parents were. They were very sick, and I eventually lost both of them and all of them in a short period of time. And I wasn't in the mood to be doing anything. And George got in touch with me and said, you know, would you like to get together with me? You know, we need you in the group. And I said, I can't do anything right now. I'm just like standing in the corner staring at the wall. And as it turned out, singing, you know, as you know, the music is the greatest therapy in the world.
Yeah.
And I kind of got back to that. The second thing that happened that night with the show in Danbury was our keyboard player was, we called him Larry Cozy Colby. His real name is Larry Jacoby. He was married at that time to a girl named Denise. And I said to you, do you think that you have a picture that you can autograph and write it to Denise? And let me tell you something. I think she still has it on the wall and looks at it every night. It's like I said, every girl named Denise, that's something that is so embedded in their hearts that it's about them. That song is about every girl named Denise, just like Gloria.
Yeah, definitely.
You know.
No, I mean, the record gave us good luck. Well, look, I never thought we'd still be singing it. I mean,
wow.
You know, you're talking from 63 to now. I mean,
well, but you see, the record is still, I mean, you know, let's face it. If you look at all of the charts, you know, CBS Type 500 and, you know, even go down the top 10, top 12, there were certain songs that are always there. Denise is one of them, In the Still of the Night. Hushabye is always in that,
right.
You know, top group. And so is Denise.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, it's just that powerful a tune. You know,
it did come out good, you know. I mean, I have to say it was one song that actually left a mark.
How many takes?
Well, it's funny. We recorded the song twice.
Right.
We recorded it twice. The first time we recorded it, I mean, it was like I would sometimes sing the lead with the orchestra.
I hear you.
Just playing. I would sing the lead, and then I would overdub. There were times, Denise, the second time we recorded it, I did one take.
Right.
And the token said, you got it, right off the top.
Magic in a bottle is, you know, there is magic in a bottle sometimes, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was talking to Lenny Welch a couple of weeks ago, and he said to me, he said that he used to go in and he used to record, and invariably he'd do, like, sometimes 8 takes, you know, 12 takes. And a lot of times in those days, some of the places that he recorded, you know, there really wasn't much bouncing tracks or whatever. The whole, the orchestra went, you went. If the drummer dropped the stick, you started over. It's not like Pro Tools now. The guy says, give me the bridge, and you sing it, and he just cuts and pastes it into the next bridge. But, you know, he says invariably they'd go back to the first or the second take and they'd say, you know, that was the right one. Usually the first one is practice. How do you like these girls? A lot of times, you know yourself, a lot of studio time, you go in there and a lot of groups come in and they actually spend studio time rehearsing the tune, you know, and they get the kinks out like in the first 6 takes. You got to come prepared because then then you bang it out. You know, that's half the secret, I think.
Yeah, no, that is the secret.
You know,
I don't like. I know what I want to do when I get in there. And you know, if I don't accomplish that right at the start, I mean, because there is some. If you work with the right people, you could go in, boom, 1, 2, 3, it's done.
Right.
But if you go in with the wrong people, I don't know what they're hearing.
Right.
But I mean, I've spent a whole day in the studio and didn't accomplish nothing.
No, I hear you.
Where, you know, I just wanted to kill the engineer because I don't know what he was on or whatever. I don't know. It's like, get rid of that track. We don't need that. And he's keeping it. And meanwhile, he's getting rid of the good tracks and keeping the bad track that is in a different key. And then I say, well, give me the key that we're doing it in. And he finds that, and then he puts the tracks down. Where's the guitar track to that? He don't have it. He got rid of it.
Right.
Everything that's good, he gets rid of. I said, no more of this. I said, get it. But
Well, you know, the engineer can make you or break you. And you know, don't piss off the sound guy because he can make you or break you too.
I've worked with engineers that, like, oh, man, forget it.
No, I know.
On the money that.
Yeah.
You know, they got it down before you even finished. Like, you know, I've worked with some engineers where I'll do a sound check maybe of a 8 to 16 bars.
Right.
And, he's working it. By the time I'm finished with the first sound check that we did, he's got me down already.
And I hear you.
The voice is already set to where when I sing the next time, it's going down just the way.
Oh, yeah. And a good engineer, he'll tell you, you know, okay, you know, give me double, give me this, give me that. And you know, not only that, later on, not in 1959 and 60, but later on, you know, you just sing along with it. And if you had to punch in a couple of words, you know, he'd punch you in, punch you out.
That was the funny thing, Jay. He would always say, we're going to overdub.
Right.
And, I mean, he'd laugh. He goes, you know, he would say, I've never heard anybody do an overdub exactly the way they did it the first time.
That's funny.
And with me, I mean, I'd go in there. Once I got the cut down, he'd say, okay, we're going to overdub. And bam, I'd knock the overdub off for one take. And he would say, I don't know how you do it. He goes, no, they'll leave a little something. Sometimes you like a little mistake in there. It's right, but it's wrong.
I hear you. Well, it's poetic license, you know. It's like musical license, you know.
Diana Ross used it in some of her records.
Oh, yeah, and not only that, you know, I've heard records with phones ringing in the background.
Yeah.
You know.
And you leave it because it's great. It does something.
Oh, yeah, it makes it very, very unique, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, but we used to have some really great sessions.
People don't understand. It's as much fun in the studio as it is, you know, that's like to a singing group. I mean, that's like Disney World. It's as much fun there as getting on stage and singing in front of 2,500 people.
I mean, we've worked with like 40 pieces.
Right.
And, you know, from the strings all the way. I mean, you know, rhythm all the way up to strings. And
right.
Horns, everything, you name it. And, I mean, it's amazing to see that I would do a rough lead. Sometimes they would say, your rough lead was great, we'll leave it in.
Yeah, scratch vocal.
Let me do one more take.
Right.
And the tokens would always say, okay, go ahead. And for some reason, they tape because they knew that sometimes I would tell them it's going to be better. And they'd get a better thing out of me. They go, we got to listen to him because when he says that,
yeah.
The times he does. There was one session I went in and I had my jacket on.
Right.
And, I mean, we were, you know, they said, we'll do you first, Rand. That
okay.
We get you out of the way. I said,
right.
Okay, good. So, they had the rhythm track down already.
Right.
So, before they added anything else, they wanted me to do a rough lead.
Right.
So, I'm doing the lead, and they're going, like, thinking that they would get a good one out of me.
Uh-huh.
So, they says, something's not right with you tonight. What is it, you know? And I got my jacket on. I'm going, well, maybe if we add something else to the song.
Right.
To build, you know, get me in a mood. I'm not in a mood. I just don't feel the song the way
right.
I know I should be feeling it.
Right.
And there's something not there. Something's missing. So back and forth.
Right.
They turn around and my brother says to me, you know, Randy, take your coat off.
Uh-huh.
I said, don't worry about it. He goes, take your coat off. Well, I took my coat off. The engineer says, okay, we're going to start it up. They start it up. The song is playing. I come in, and I just ran through the whole thing. And the engineer goes, whatever you did, Randy, we got to do it like that from now on. I go, what did I do? He says, well, the next time you come in, just take your jacket off and start singing. It was great. You're done.
Right. Well, you
I
know.
I went, what? He goes, you did a beautiful job. He said, you couldn't ask for anything better.
Wow.
And I forget what cut it was. I don't know if it was Silver and Gold.
Right.
When we did. Or it might have been Trinity Impossible.
Gotcha. Which is, that's a tough song to do.
But, you know, I mean, it was just, I don't know, something there I just didn't feel right, but once I took my jacket off, it was like I just laid right in with the tracks and everything, and it came out, you know.
What's amazing to me is how many tunes you guys recorded. I mean, you guys recorded a lot of tunes, man.
Oh, yeah, even under other names.
A lot of stuff.
We recorded under Madison Street.
Right.
That was actually Madison Street and Randy and the Rainbows. That was it. We didn't record on any other names. So.
Yeah.
The other group talks that we did, but no, the only thing we recorded under was Randy and the Rainbows. And while we were Randy and the Rainbows, we did record on the Madison Street. We
uh-huh.
did, you know, all the disco stuff out.
Right, right.
And everything.
Right.
You know.
Why Do Kids Grow Up? I mean, that was a great tune.
Oh, yeah. That we actually had that song, excuse me, when we had Denise.
Uh-huh.
But for some reason, that would have been a bigger hit than Denise.
Right.
We recorded it, and the way we did it was different than Denise. And I kept telling the tokens, we're experimenting, and it's a stupid time to experiment. I mean, we did Denise the way we did it, it was a hit. Let's do Why Do Kids Grow Up like Denise. It'll
right.
be a hit. You could hear it.
Right.
Back and forth.
Uh-huh.
Finally, they bought the record a different way.
Uh-huh.
Up to Laurie. Laurie heard it and says, no way. They bought up a couple of other songs. Laurie says, no, I want something that's similar. So they called us up. They said, okay, we're going to go in. We're going to do it like Denise.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, the song, Why Do Kids Grow Up? The
right.
message, Why Do Kids Grow Up? And
right.
it sounded so great
uh-huh.
when we did it. We recorded it that night. They mixed it and everything. Gave it to Laurie Records. Laurie says, why did it take you so long to give me this record? And it was like they flipped over the record.
Wow.
Just as it was. They put it out right away. But, you know, I mean... everything was so bad timing.
Well, 64, things were like changing drastically for everybody at that time.
If the record came out like as
63
coming down the chart.
Right.
You know, I mean, Denise was on the charts like 16, 17 weeks.
Right.
It was long for a record to be on the charts. It's good, but it would have been better had we released Why Do Kids Grow Up.
Well,
it should have been, you know.
Right.
Denise is up on the charts. It's number one, number two, whatever it is.
Right.
It starts coming down, number four, number five. You know, put the other one out because as it's coming down, Why Do Kids Grow Up will be going up the charts, passing it up, you know.
Yeah, and, I agree with you 100%.
You know, I mean, and we were at the Brooklyn Fox, and
right.
Murray DeKay was saying to me, Randy, where's your new record? When's it coming out?
I
said, well, we did go in. We recorded it while we were at the Brooklyn Fox.
Right.
We went into the studio to record Why Do Kids Grow Up.
Well, at least you were warmed up.
Oh, yeah. It was like, you know, the recording that week and being sick that I said,
oh, man.
That was crazy. When he says, we're recording tonight. I says, well, we don't want to be on a session. He says, well, you know, the song is great. I says, but we're not in the great of, you know, we don't have, sound great. I mean, our vocals are like, you know, I got laryngitis.
Right.
But my brother has 108, four fever. I mean, he was sweating. He couldn't even sing.
And they probably said, sing lying down. We don't care. We want it
out. They didn't. They didn't. They just wanted you to get up there, sing, do what you got to do, and that's it.
I've heard your version of Little Star. As a matter of fact, I've played it on my show, and that's a great cut, too.
Oh, thank you so much.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder where you are. Wish I may, wish I might, make this wish come true tonight. Search all over for a love.
Vito, he fell in love with the song.
Right.
And I remember when we did it, Vito, we did a job for the good guys at the time.
Yeah, and Vito was Vito.
Vito was there. He came over, and I said, hey, how you doing? He goes, great. He says, I love the way you did the tune.
Wow.
I says, thank you. I said, you know, I always loved his way.
Also, some of the Elegance other stuff is like right on the money, but people don't get to hear that too often either.
Right, yeah.
And then there's one of my all-time favorite tunes, and we spoke about this the other day, and that is that every a cappella group on the corner always got a hold of Happy Teenager.
Oh my God.
And if you couldn't do the chime on Happy Teenager, who the heck were you? Because that tune was a great tune. I mean, I've heard it a cappella by so many other groups, and that should have been a mega, mega hit.
Well, you know, that's funny. A lot of people were saying that, too.
La, 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 la. La, 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 la,
I mean, that's Jay Siegel's favorite song,
boy. Oh, absolutely. I mean, that song is just, I mean, it shows off a vocal group.
Yeah.
It just shows off a vocal group. It's like I said, you know, you want to audition a bunch of guys for a show. You say, listen to this and give me Happy Teenager. Give me the chime at the beginning, the round at the beginning on Happy Teenager, because if you can't sing, you can't do that tune. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was a good tune. I remember we were in the Tokens' office, and they just, you know, they started playing it, and they were showing us how it goes, you know. And then, like, we said, oh, good, nice hook. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, why don't we chime in? You know, like,
it worked for me. And the other thing I noticed, because I'm an aficionado and most people don't, you had in the middle something that the Tokens did on a lot of records. You had, you had the claps in there, and they and if you listen to a lot of their records, they always use claps in the right and very tastefully in the right places, because sometimes that doesn't work.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. But I mean, I remember we used to have a ball. There were only certain you know, people that would do the hand clapping and foot stomping, because. We would follow each other, and I mean, even though you know, we knew what we were doing, there were times we would just screw it up to, you know, get a little laugh out of it.
Oh yeah, you know.
But I mean, some of the things that we did with the hand clapping was.
And also, the Tokens did a lot of snapping on their records too, and you could hear, you know, because a lot of times, you know, if I know in the studio, a lot of times if you just by inadvertently started snapping your fingers, you know, like a lot of groups do to get in the groove, the engineer would say, "Who's snapping?" And they'd cut it. You know, they'd say, "Okay, you know, give me that over again. I heard somebody snapping." A lot of times, if you get everybody doing it the right way, it really adds.
It does.
But then
a lot of good stuff in the old days. I mean, I remember, you know, being young, being in the business. I mean, I did. Hear some really great stuff come out of the studios from Little Anthony, Flamingos. I mean, you name it. I mean, I was in the studio with George Goldman when he was recording the Flamingos and Little Anthony and, you know, a couple of the other groups.
Right.
And we were with the Dial Tones waiting to go in. And, I mean, sometimes it was a whole day. We'd be in there. We'd have to be there, even though we weren't recording. But we had to be in the studio, and we'd be outside listening.
Right.
Sitting down, he'd be buying lunch for everybody, whatever it was. And so we're there, we're spending the day, we're hearing the other groups do their stuff and eating and talking.
Right. But that's, you know what? The camaraderie that you have is great, and you also learn. I mean, I was lucky to spend a lot of time in some of the big studios. You know, I learned just by sitting there and learned, you know, and every once in a while they say, come over here, we need a vocal or whatever. And, you know, and what's funny is I'm on a lot of records that I just had the opportunity to, like, sing first tenor and whatever, and they say, okay, thank you.
You right, know, very long, goodbye.
There were a lot of guys that were like that. You know, they were just hanging around. Okay, we need another voice in here. And if you know what you're doing, you know, you just come in and you listen to the song twice and you do it. Period.
Definitely. Well, it should be, right.
So let me ask you something. What's Randy Sefuto's favorite Randy and the Rainbows tune?
Oh, my God. You know, well, of course, I love Denise that put us on the charts.
Right.
But thanks to the fans out there. If they didn't buy it, we wouldn't be on the charts, you know.
No, that's true, but it was also a great record and a great group. You know, sometimes you got a great tune and an ag group. Sometimes you get an ag group with a great tune. But in that case, it was a great tune and a great group. And that's, you know, that's what makes it all click.
Well, Dad, I would say we did a version of I Want to Be Lonely.
Uh-huh.
And we did it, it might be, they may have a copy of it or not. I mean, I'm not even sure. I know I've heard the closest thing to it years back that Jay had played for me.
Right.
The tune called I Want to Be Lonely. And
right.
It was like a rag doll type thing the way we did it.
Uh-huh.
And the melody was so beautiful. You know, we shared a kiss beneath the sky of blue.
Right.
we promised faithfully that we would be true. And it was like, oh my God, when I heard the finished cut, the harmony and everything was like,
yeah,
beautiful. And Lormy Records, when they heard it, they said, it's too beautiful, which it killed me.
Uh-huh.
It's too beautiful a song to put out.
Get out of here.
Yeah, now, I mean, that didn't make any sense.
Well, who owns the masters? I guess they do.
Well, they do. Once they bought it from the tokens, they owned it.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, when they said it's too beautiful a song to put out, it won't make a hit. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
How could you say it's too beautiful a song to put out? Mm-hmm. It won't make a hit. If it's a beautiful song, I think a lot of people are going to want to buy it.
No, I hear you loud and clear, but you know what? They didn't always make great decisions, you know.
They didn't. Yeah, well, you know, back then, the record companies told you what to do. I mean, me and my brother, we love like all different music. I mean,
right.
Symphony, you name it. We,
right.
If it's got cuts in it that are beautiful,
good music is good music, always, you know.
Right. And we've heard cuts, well, I know a lot of people have, of the Flamingos.
Oh, yeah.
Before they were with, like, George Golna.
Right.
And, I mean, you wouldn't even think it was the Flamingos.
I hear you. So as far as the Rainbows go, tell me about the ambient sound
situation. Well, that was fun. I mean, Marty Pekar, of course, he produced it all.
Right.
And, you know, he said, if I don't have the lead singer of the group, we don't do it.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that was the way it was there.
Right. And I know that there was a Mystics and Rainbows
release
album.
Yeah, they took stuff from our second album.
Right.
You know, the second CD. Excuse me, and stuff from the Mystics.
Right.
And they combined it, you know, together. Like Randy and the Rainbows meet the Mystics.
Right, you know, which is a big-selling CD. That one is all over the net, you know.
Nice.
I think Collectibles is selling that and quite a few other people, you know, as far as I know. And then, if you remember correctly, about 2 or 3 years ago, we tried to put together a George Galfos Mystics Randy and the Rainbow CD, which never came to bear. But I will tell you this. I had all of our tunes lined up and ready to go, mastered, mixed, and everything else that I did in my studio. And I never could figure out why it didn't come to be, but we won't talk about that because there's a lot of Randy stuff around there. Perhaps there's some Randy stuff that nobody's heard yet.
Oh, know? There must be, because I know there were some things that we recorded. The Tokens must have them, or I know somebody has them, because we were in the studio quite a lot, and you know, changing, you know, I mean, we did one song like 2 or 3 different ways, you know, and finally you say, hey, this is the way it is. I mean, you hear it, you know, it's not missing anything. Everything that it needs is there. It's tasteful. It's got it. Mm-hmm. Leave it alone, you know. Then, oh, wait, I got a different idea for that song, and you're going in again.
Oh, yeah.
And again, like,
well, it's great when you can use the studio as a laboratory. And, you know, studio time is expensive and everything else, but if you can do, and now with Pro Tools, I mean, I do all my stuff on Pro Tools, and boy, it's a different world. You know, in the old days when they would just like, they'd actually cut out with a razor pieces of tape and tape them in and whatever. Tell me about Dick Clark.
Well, Dick Clark was, oh my God, how would I say it? He was one of a kind, you know?
Yep.
I mean, a nice person, business all the way with him. Business.
Cool.
With Dick Clark, it was business.
Yep.
100%. I mean, you do his show. We did his show twice, and he wasn't there. It was like a thing that, I forget what he was doing, but we were in town, and he wanted us on the show.
Right.
And, you know, they announced us, and he, you know, we sang, you know, and all, and then when it came down that it was on, he said, okay, you know, and here we got Randy and the Rainbows for you today, Denise, you know, and it was like, you know, he was there, but he wasn't.
I hear you.
And then we were there, but he was a nice guy. I mean, we did a couple of different things for him.
And Clay Cole, I'm going to be with in April at a show down.
Clay Cole was a
And Clay Cole, let me tell you, my interview with him was an hour and 45 minutes. And my show, is usually about an hour, but Clay went on for an hour and 45 minutes. We got a special, it's archived. And Clay's book and his knowledge and his stuff, now that he's come out, he disappeared for a while and just, kind of ran away from the business. But, boy, he's got a lot to say.
We did a lot of shows for him.
Oh, I know.
And, I mean, to find out that they used the shows that, like, not only that we did, a lot of American groups did, they used them for the English groups. When the English groups came on,
right,
instead of saving our tapes, they went over them.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, with the English groups. And, I mean, they had so many great shows.
I know.
We did stuff with, what's his name, Chuck McCann.
Oh, Chuck was, like, the funniest guy in the world.
Yeah, and he was on the show.
Right, I remember.
Oh, and we used to do skits. I mean, I remember doing skits with, like, of course we sang and stuff like that, pantomime the song, lip sync the song.
Yep.
And then we'd do little skits with Chuck McCann.
Hi, this is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend Mike Miller.
You've done it all. You've done it all, Randy. So, Randy, the group right now, who's in the group right now, just so that
right
people
now,
will know?
Right now, myself, my brother Frank.
Right.
Tony Vara and right. Charlie Rocco.
Gotcha. I've worked with the group, and you guys are vocally so flawlessly good.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I mean, it's Randy and the Rainbows.
There is another group out there. I mean, let the people know that there is another group, at least. And, I mean, if you want the real McCoy, I guess you might as well say, if you ever see Randy and the Rainbows featuring Randy Sofuto, you know that that's the real McCoy. But if you hear of a group Randy and the Rainbows and there's no Randy Sofuto in it, you know that that's not the real group. And what else? They're starting to put out albums from what I hear with no picture.
Could be.
So if you don't see my picture or my group's picture on the cover, you know that they're just trying to say that it's Randy and the Rainbows that did an old album, and they're putting it out without their picture. So,
well, I'm with you, Randy. You're my Randy.
You know, don't spend your money on something that is not the real thing. And, you know, people out there give money away thinking they're doing the right thing. Well, I love the group. I want to buy the thing to help the group, and I love their music, so I want it. But if there's no picture, if it doesn't say Randy Sofuto on it, it's not me. It's not Randy and the Rainbows.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, what more can we say? But if they want more on it, they can go to www.randyandtherainbowssofuto.com. That's SAFUTO.com.
Very, very cool. Well, you know, an hour goes very fast, Randy. Well, Randy, thank you so much for being my guest on the Harmony Street Show.
Oh, Mike, it was a pleasure, and it always is a pleasure talking to you.
You know, I mean, we're really good friends, and we've worked together, and we've had some good times together, but, I consider you doo-wop royalty, and, to have stood on the same stage with you over the years has been a thrill for me because, you know, you're the royalty, man.
Thank you so much. I really
You're the man, and I want you to kiss all the guys in the groups for me, and give them a real good pat on the head and tell them I said hello. That's been Randy Sofuto, Randy of the Rainbows. There is no other on the Harmony Street Show.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure, and all my fans out there, please keep listening. Without you, we're nowhere, but with you, we're strong. And we can, our music will survive. It's been surviving. Let's keep it that way. Love yous all. Good luck.
Yeah, take care, Randy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.